What an unforgettable year of firsts it was for our special guest today on Musings on Golf. Hello and welcome once again to our weekly storytelling podcast. I am Kelly Elbin, joined by Jenna Self, our executive producer. I have to tell you, outside of the fantastic play of Scottie Scheffler with his two major championships and the three wins posted by Ben Griffin, no other American golfer had a better, more satisfying 2025 than Cameron Young, who is that special guest who you will hear from shortly. After the interview, we'll also hear from a very emotional Rory McIlroy, and I'll explain a little bit before we hear that clip. We'll find out how one-handed putting played a major role in a victory on the PGA Tour. And we'll look ahead to next week for a very special Thanksgiving episode of Musings on Golf. A little bit before the Ryder Cup, I guess it was Ryder Cup week, David Young, PGA of America, golf professional for many, many years, was the head professional at Sleepy Hollow Country Club in Westchester County, New York, joined us as our guest to preview the Ryder Cup, but also to talk about the fact that his son Cameron was going to be representing the United States and in Cameron's home state of New York, and Cameron's debut in the Ryder Cup and how cool that was going to be. Well, son of a gun, if it didn't turn out that Cameron Young had the most points recorded for any American in a dramatic Sunday, certainly it was, but they came up short to the Europeans. But his 3 points over the course of the 3 days of competition were the most for any United States player. And it wasn't surprising. Cameron Young had tied the course record at Bethpage Bluff. He tied that course record when he won the New York State Open back in 2016 or 17. He became the first amateur to win the New York State Open when he tied that course record. He knows the golf course extremely well. This has been a real breakthrough year for Cameron Young. 7 times he had been a runner-up. And as I point out, that was a little misleading. When you hear the interview, it wasn't in any way as if Cameron Young was playing poorly in any of those final rounds. In fact, he played well. He just got beat. And I think he understood that, accepted that. And his dad helped him kind of through that process. And then finally, at the Wyndham Championship in Greensboro, near the end of the season, he got that win and got it in convincing fashion. He bogeyed the first hole of his final round, then reeled off 5 straight birdies. And it was pretty obvious that he was gonna get that win. And then came the Ryder Cup, and you're going to hear from him about what it was like to get that call, in this case from U.S. Ryder Cup captain Keegan Bradley, to let him know that, hey kid, you've done everything. You've checked all the boxes. You're one of my 6 Ryder Cup selections. I wish that Captain Bradley had maybe put him out that first morning, because when he went out in the afternoon with Justin Thomas, they had success. The thing that I found about Cameron Young, at least on television, so I think you'll hear this, he's a very thoughtful guy and somewhat stoic in his approach. Well, you didn't see any of that. You saw pure emotion when he made a clinching putt on the 18th green in the opening match on Sunday and got the U.S. off to a big come from behind that almost led to a victory. But Cameron Young's a very likable guy, has a lot of very positive things to say about his time at Wake Forest University. And just the pride of being the son of a PGA of America professional, the relationship with his dad as his dad and as his teacher. I mean, David's been there pretty much every step of the way. So really, really cool interview with Cameron Young. And again, some really neat audio for you on the other side from Rory. Please stick around for that. But for now, enjoy this interview with Mr. Breakout of 2025 and the leading Ryder Cup point getter for the United States team, Cameron Young, right after this from our corporate partners, our good friends at Titleist and William and Harry. America, this is your moment. William and Harry's limited edition spirit shoe is here so every fan can feel like part Team USA from the first tee to the final putt. 2 head-turning designs, premium deer skin, 100% waterproof with spikeless grip and all-day comfort. Limited run, don't sit this one out. Pre-buy now at williamandharry.com. Get into spirit. Get into comfort.
Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are the best performing, most consistent in the game. So how does the best get better? You start by listening to the best players in the world. You experiment, iterate, validate. You trust the best process to create the best golf ball the game has ever known. The all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. More speed off the tee. More control with your irons. More spin with the wedges. And more opportunity to shoot your lowest scores.
Well, after so many close calls, our special guest today had the year of his professional life on the PGA Tour in 2025. His first victory and his first appearance on the U.S. Ryder Cup team were the result of persistent belief and absolutely ongoing improvement. And he accomplished it all with his dad, PGA of America professional, walking by his side and helping guide him throughout it all. He's the pride of Scarborough, New York. Couldn't be happier to welcome Cameron Young to Musings on Golf. How you doing, Cam?
Doing all right. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, hey, man. Cameron, I wonder if we could sort of start. Perhaps you might have a story. Your dad, David, longtime PGA head professional at Sleepy Hollow Country Club in Westchester County. Your mom, Barbara, is a good player, caddied for you. They really have been, you know, by your side for your entire life, certainly on the golf end. Perhaps an interesting story of whether a round of golf with your dad or your mom driving you to a tournament that you might like to share to kind of get us going.
Yeah, I mean, they were obviously instrumental in everything that has come of my golf. But I think really in the spirit of Thanksgiving, where my kind of gratitude lies is obviously with them, but also with, you know, where I grew up. My dad was a head pro at Sleepy Hollow for 21 years, I think. And really from the time I was a young kid, I think we went there when I was 3 or 4. So I basically had the run of the place from that age on. And, you know, my family was always incredibly welcomed by the membership there. I was given incredible opportunity to use the facilities. And, I did work with my dad a lot. My mom did a lot in driving, but I think the access that I had to golf and to a good facility at Sleepy Hollow is a major, you know, major factor in me growing up loving golf and being able to practice and achieving, you know, a level of play that gets you somewhere in the sport.
Yeah, I would imagine, therefore, a lot of very special people at Sleepy Hollow, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And to this day, I mean, the support that I get from there is unbelievable. They have, you know, watch parties in the bar when I'm playing well. And I've seen some videos of, you know, hundreds of people gathered around a TV all watching during the Wyndham too, which is really cool to have that kind of base of support back home for me.
Yeah, no question. Interviewed your dad, had a nice talk with him leading into the Ryder Cup. And we talked a lot about the two of you working together. And he said something that was interesting to me, that he always felt it was easy to work with you. I guess maybe is that maybe two kindred spirits in a way in terms of your personalities. Is that why he would use a word like that as he helped you mature?
I think so. We do have a lot of very similar personality traits, I would say. We kind of, you know, we communicate really well. Things that make sense to him make sense to me. And I think I was just from a young age, I think whether it was kind of impressed upon me or whether I intuitively understood it, I knew that my dad was, you know, a smart guy and knew that he knew the game of golf really well. My mom too. So I think just from me, I think from just a young age, I understood that he was someone that I could learn from in the game of golf, and I was in a lot of other areas too, but I think that just made it easy. He was a really good teacher for me, starting from a very young age. And I think just his approach to golf always made sense to me. And to this day, a lot of the things we do are simple. And it just really, like you said, it's never been difficult. And I think you're right. I think a lot of it is just similar personality. We look at things a lot the same way. And that has worked out really well for him coaching me throughout my career.
And I read that your aunt is also a golf teaching professional. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, she is. She, when I was growing up, she worked at a course not far from us in New York. And then she taught at Chelsea Piers for a number of years and then went down to the Shore Club in New Jersey, over the last few years. So she's been teaching for a very long time. She was a really good player, kind of in her prime.
What's her name, Cam?
Marjorie Jones. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So she's played, you know, at a high level for a long time. And yeah, she's been teaching for as long as I remember.
I was struck, a really nice interview that Golf Channel had with you after your win at Wyndham. You talked about you being mentally so much better at that point in your career in 2025 versus even when you were the rookie of the year in 2021-22. What do you mean by that? What did that mean mentally? Is that course management? How do you define that?
I'd say it's a few different things, but mostly it's just a lot of being oriented toward my own process and how I'm going to go through the day. I think there's been a lot of times where maybe I've run a little bit hot, just a little bit angry. And I think early on, it didn't necessarily hurt me as much because there's kind of stages in golf as you're playing. And there's times, especially when you're young, where you haven't figured out that it's difficult yet. And I think I had been through it a little bit in college. And then my first year on the PGA Tour just felt easy. It felt like, you know, I had some bad weeks. I missed more cuts that year than probably any year until this year. But I think when it got going good, it just felt so easy. And, you know, there's kind of the period following that where I think it just felt a lot harder. And coming out the other side of that a little bit, the second half of this past year, I was just able to manage those emotions a lot better and keep myself, you know, just kind of keep taking one step toward, you know, an end goal and focused on the process of getting there rather than the small things that happen throughout the rounds of golf and throughout the days out playing on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, and you could even cite the, you know, that what you called kind of a messy bogey on that first hole at Wyndham. And then, man, you go and run off five straight birdies. It sounds like you were like, it was almost like a defensive back who gets beat on a long pass who just has to slough that off and just get right back in playing, right?
Yeah, I think so. And to me, that bogey, I was a little bit nervous. But I kind of just chunked a wedge. It's not like, it wasn't like I did anything awful. It just, that just so happened to be the place that I made a mistake. And then that pitch, it looks simple probably on TV, but it's very grainy and it's kind of up and over a knob. So it's, I think, a much trickier shot than it looks like. And it's just one of those things that I made a mistake and it happened to look bad kind of on the first hole, like I was really losing it. But at that point, we really had spent a lot of time kind of on the mental side of it. Everything that we did was another step, another shot toward the first tee at the Ryder Cup. So at that point, you know, I wasn't bogeying the first hole. I was hitting shots on my way to making that Ryder Cup team. And I'm sure that I was annoyed at the time, but I hardly even remember because I was kind of just going through the motions of getting myself to that team and to East Lake. And I knew the opportunity I had in front of me and that bogey wasn't going to be the end of my day there.
Was that a process you worked on with your dad or others involved? Who's involved in sort of a your team, if you will?
Yeah, it's my dad. It's my caddy. It's a sports psychologist, my agents. It's a whole group. And I think starting, you know, after I missed the cut at the Masters, we kind of all, you know, I remember Friday afternoon or Saturday morning, I basically went through all those people and called all of them and talked for, you know, 15 or 20 minutes. And that's kind of when we just decided to orient ourselves toward the end of the season where we were going to be. and not necessarily try to fix why I missed the cut at the Masters. Obviously, there's a bunch of different reasons that you can play poorly. And in that moment, it didn't feel like I had played bad golf. So it was just a matter of reorienting ourselves toward an end goal and kind of focusing on how I'm going to execute each shot on the way to that goal, as opposed to, you know, I hit that right, how do I fix it? It was more a matter of, okay, you know, what's next? Go hit the next one and try to execute my process as well as I could, you know, just for each shot and for each day, so that at the end of the season, you could say, okay, I didn't just try my hardest, because that's kind of what can lead to some of the frustration. It was, I put my effort towards something that I could control, and the rest of it came next.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So pleased to be joined by Cameron Young here on Musings on Golf. You mentioned about your time in college. You had a successful career at Wake Forest University. Why did you choose to become a Demon Deacon?
There were a few reasons. I really liked the coaches there, Coach Haas, and then the assistant was Dan Walters. They were great guys. I knew a couple guys on the team a little bit that were a little older than me. I knew that Will Zalatoris was coming in the year before me. So, and then an Irish kid, Paul McBride, who was a very good player. So I had a feeling that the team was going to be pretty good, and, they have great facilities. They have a practice area right there on campus. It's probably 200 yards from your freshman dorm. And, I just liked it there. I mean, the people are of a kind. It's kind of a Southern place. And I just really enjoyed it. It was a whole bunch of reasons. I you know, on one side of it, I really liked the opportunity to get a good education. I ended up probably not liking schoolwork as much as I thought I might, but I think it was, in the end, I think a really good place for me.
Right. I think a lot of times it's the fit. Like, I went to the University of Richmond, which in terms of enrollment size is very similar to Wake. And I remember going to see Wake Forest campus, and it was similar to Richmond. Some, you know, sometimes a big, broad university works for some people. Sometimes a smaller place works for others. It sounds like that was just a nice, as you said, a nice fit for you in a lot of ways.
Yeah, absolutely. It was not huge. I mean, I remember visiting some of the bigger schools, like, you know, University of Florida or Georgia, and I liked those places too, but it just was busier than I was used to. And Wake Forest is not. It's, you know, you are busy personally, but it's not a busy place. It's not, you know, struggling through crowds like on the streets between classes. It's kind of a little bit more just calm. It's a really nice place. I love it.
Hey, a couple of things before we get into Ryder Cup. I just did a little research, and a lot was made of your 7 runner-up finishes, one of which was in match play. But based on my research, in the 6 other events, your worst final round score was 70 in any of those. Yeah. Cameron had to be like, look, playing badly, I just maybe got beat by somebody who was playing a little bit better. I would think psychologically that's a good thing to feed off of.
Yeah, I think there was a good bit made out of it that wasn't really there to me. Like you said, none of those, I didn't lose any of those tournaments. I think maybe the closest I came was the PGA in 22.
Yeah.
I made a double bogey on the 16th hole on Sunday. And as it turned out, you know, Mito Pereira had a one-shot lead going into 18. So it's hard to say that I lost the tournament when, you know, I finished double bogey, birdie, par or whatever to come up one short. But to me, I felt like that was the closest I came to lose anything. I don't know if that's the 70 or not. I think it might be.
And that was at Southern Hills, right?
Yeah, at Southern Hills. But yeah, to me, I had never played poorly on Sunday. And, you know, if anything, it was kind of annoying not to have won, but it wasn't, from my perspective, like a... There was no indication that I couldn't win. I had never played golf on Sunday in a way that was indicative of, you know, hey, if I get in a situation, I might struggle. I just never had really had a tournament in my hands. And I also had never quite shot 63 or 64 to win. So it wasn't, to me, one of those things where it was an indication of, anything wrong. It just was kind of a product of circumstance. It wasn't like I had something in my hands and I gave it away. It just, I never quite had one.
Absolutely. Okay, let's talk Ryder Cup. Cameron, where were you and how did you react when Captain Bradley called you to let you know that you were one of his picks and you're going to be playing your first Ryder Cup in your home state?
Yeah, I was getting off the flight home from Atlanta on Monday morning after the tour championship. And yeah, it had been, at that point, I felt like weeks of, well, I feel like I've done enough, but I don't know. And, you know, he was great throughout all that process. He, you know, after Wyndham called me and said, hey, like, great plan. I felt like he really wanted to pick me because he knew how much it meant to me being in New York and the fact that I got passed over last Ryder Cup. And I think he was aware of kind of how important it was to me to make that team. And so he called me and he just said, hey, man, you know, great plan. Really happy for you. I know how much this means to you, but you got to show me some more. So I think that was perfect because it didn't promise me anything. All it did was let me know that I was on his radar and that like there was a chance if I played the necessary golf to make the team. So that kind of went on for 3 more weeks. And yeah, when he called me, obviously it's an experience you just don't get very often, I think. I mean, especially given where I was 6 months prior, golf wise, I think that it had felt so out of reach, and to kind of realize that moment was really, really cool. I mean, there's not much like it in the game of golf. So, thankfully my parents were there a few minutes later and I got to tell them and, yeah, I mean, I'm incredibly grateful to him to give me the opportunity to represent the country.
I'm guessing that was a fairly emotional moment with your parents.
Yeah, for sure. I think, my dad, I don't know if he cried, but as close as he's going to get to crying, my mom was kind of in disbelief. So, yeah, I mean, and it's so much that goes into it. My wife was there with me with all my kids and, you know, she had kind of grinded through the whole year knowing that was the goal. And, yeah, I mean, just to have all of us there at once, that's kind of the group that all works on my behalf. And, yeah, it was special to share with all of them.
Speaking of emotions, please give us a sense of what your emotions were like on that first tee on Friday afternoon. You paired with Justin Thomas in a four-ball match. You've got the President of the United States, for goodness, watching you tee it off. What was that like? What were the emotions? How did that feel?
Yeah, it's hard to describe. I mean, to be honest, I didn't even see President Trump there because I was just trying to like get through the first tee. So I knew he was there that day, but I completely forgot and didn't even look for him. I was getting to the tee. I was shaking hands and I was going to go hit my shot.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's as good as it could have been for me. I mean, Justin Thomas has been great to me throughout my career. He was really one of the first ones of kind of the group older than me by a few years to, you know, welcome me, on that President's Cup team and even just playing at home a little bit that first year. He was one of the first people to kind of reach out and, you know, welcome me into that group of guys. So it was really nice kind of sharing that with him just because I really couldn't have been more comfortable with another person next to me. You know, he's a great player and he's been a great guy to me. So I was thankful to have him, but we talked about it a few days before and, you know, he said, I don't mind going first or second. It's kind of up to you. If you get there and you need me to hit, I'll hit. And I said, you know, I think I'll be okay to go first. And we didn't really talk about it again. We got to the tunnel and he said, so what do you want to do? And I was like, you know, I feel all right. I'll go. And that's what we did. And I thought I would be more nervous. I definitely was nervous a little bit, but I think the fact that we had spent, you know, 4, 5, 6 months just preparing to hit that tee shot, kind of like I said before, every shot I hit during the playoffs was just another shot before I got to that first tee at Bethpage. And So I just felt so ready for it. Honestly, it was kind of one of those times that you realize how much the preparation and the work beforehand can impact how you feel in that moment. And I think it was really good validation that stuff works and that, you know, I'm capable of preparing myself for a moment like that.
Well, it very much was validation. I mean, you ended up with 3 points, which I believe was the most of any U.S. player. Obviously, you guys came up a little bit short. The Sunday rally was crazy good stuff off the charts. Yeah. What was it like the night before in the team room? What was the sense of what you needed to do, the feeling in general?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to ignore the kind of the situation you're in. I mean, I think as a team, everybody in the room knows what you've got in front of you. You basically have to set a record, which means you have to do something no one's ever done before. And it wasn't like a loud and rowdy environment. It was kind of quiet, but it was not quiet in a negative way, I would say. It was quiet in a way of understanding, and everyone was just trying to be ready to go do their job the next morning. I think that was really more the sense that I got. No one was defeated. You know, Keegan laid it out very plainly for us. He's like, you know, look, we're going to go do something that no one's done before. And we came very, very close. Everybody played some incredible golf on Sunday. And I think that partly is a product of what that environment was like. Nobody was down. It was just, I think, a very quiet, aware, focused group of people, which is pretty cool looking back on it. I mean, at the time, I'm just sitting there now, and then I've got to go tee it up against Justin Rose in the morning, and I'm kind of already into my head of, you know, what I'm going to do. And looking back on it, I think that's just kind of where everybody was at. And I think that showed really strongly in the golf I played on Sunday.
What makes you a good match player? What, when you're playing someone as good as Justin Rose, do you block him out? Are you focused strictly on what you're doing? What's your mind like in a one-on-one match play environment?
I think in a lot of ways it makes it easier to be playing in match play like that, because it's just so easy to let things go. You just have to so quickly. And to me, I mean, really that whole week, every shot you hit, every putt you hit is just an opportunity to make a bunch of people go nuts. And I think that's kind of a fun way to look at it. So I was just trying to kind of take in, you know, that's probably the last opportunity I have for at least a year of something like that. And then, you know, another two for a Ryder Cup. And they're not going to be going as crazy there. So, and it's really once in a lifetime. It's, you know, my home state in New York at Bethpage. It's, you don't get many of those. So I was partially trying to enjoy it just because it's such a rare opportunity. And partially it's just great motivation to know that, you know, everything that you do is going to impact the sentiment of the day. You know, you get up early, you make a putt on the first hole, Justin hears that back on the tee in the second match. And that kind of spiral. And that's basically what happened. So it was just a really, really awesome kind of situation to be put in. I was so happy to be out in that first match and happy to play against someone that, you know, has such a good Ryder Cup record and is such a great player.
Well, I think also to be put in that position must have been a great feeling to be told by the captain, you're my first guy out. We need you. We're relying on you to get that first point, right?
Yeah. For me, it's just a huge, huge opportunity, I think. I didn't feel burdened by it at all. I wasn't nervous for the sake of knowing that I needed to win my point. It was, to me, it just, the whole day felt like a huge opportunity to kind of make my mark on the event, and hoping that would, you know, either inspire a chain of events or be a part of a chain of events that could possibly lead to us winning that day. And, you know, I wish I had done it a little earlier, but I think making the putt on 18 and then watching kind of what ensued was absolutely one of the coolest things in my life.
Absolutely. Was that the coolest moment for you, that putt on 18?
Yeah.
That had to be, right?
I've said a few times that I think it's probably the first positive thing that I've shouted on a golf course. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting in that moment, hitting that putt is, like, you're on one hand, you're acutely aware that Like, this is maybe the only putt like it you'll ever have in your life. And it's one that you've made in your head 1,000 times. And at the same time, you're trying to say, like, to yourself, like, okay, I understand all that, but, you know, I'm going to, like, make a good stroke, start it on my line. I'm not going to look, and I'll look up when it's 4 feet short and see where it's going. And, yeah, so it's interesting kind of to have those two conflicting parts of your mind in that moment. And thankfully, the one that makes the ball go in won out, and not the, you know, looking up early and seeing where it is. But yeah, I mean, there's really nothing like it. I mean, there's a very real chance that I never have a putt like that again in my life. You know, I may never make another team. I may never have another match that goes to 18. I may never have, you know, another singles match that goes to 18, whatever it is. There's a chance that that's the last putt that I hit like that in my life. And, you know, I'm very thankful that it went in. One, just because it was pretty cool. Two, just because I know that that's in there somewhere. You know, I can look back on that in other situations if I am fortunate enough to be in them, and I know that I've executed at that level and you know, gotten the job done when it matters.
No, that's terrific. Down to our final two questions with Cameron Young. We talked a lot about your folks. I'm wondering, during the week of the Ryder Cup, how much time were you able to spend with your dad, both just on the, obviously on the range hitting balls, but also just time spent with him and with your mom that week?
Almost none. That week, very, very busy.
Yeah.
There's a lot
of work with your dad on the range at all?
Yeah. He was there for all my warmups. That's kind of our routine on the road. Generally, he travels.
Now, I was wondering how much time do you spend with your dad week in and week out when you're on tour?
Yeah, when we're out playing, he's there almost all the time. I think he missed one or two events this last year.
Right.
And you know, when my family comes, which is also almost all the time, he tends to stay with us a lot. So he kind of plays a bunch of different roles. He can watch the kids for like 30 minutes. For us, but he also in my golf, that's his main thing. I mean, he spends a lot of time even away from the course kind of looking at things for me, and then our normal routine is, you know, he comes out, he sets up all my putting drills, you know, he carries around all my stuff that I need before I go play, and he's, you know, both coach and kind of, you know, just additional hands for anything that needs to get done. So I see him a lot on the road. We see him at home too. We live about 15 minutes from my parents, so my kids are actually up there at swim lessons right now.
Nice.
But we see a lot of them, and my mom more at home. She travels a little bit, but not as much as my dad.
Hey, a final question, Cam, and one that I ask all of my guests, and I always have a lot of fun with the responses. It has to do with a dream foursome.
Yeah.
If you could have three people, whether they're living or deceased, who you could play a kind of a magical round of golf with, who would those three be, and where would you go play?
The where is tough. I mean, I think going back to Sleepy Hollow is a good one, just because I know every inch of that place. I was just there for the first time in a year or two, a few weeks or the week after Ryder Cup, actually. And it just feels like I never left. So it's kind of one of those things that, you know, when you get back to the same place, it feels like no time has passed. It happens to me every year at the Masters. Every time I'm like, man, I feel like I just left here 5 minutes ago. So maybe Sleepy Hollow, and then, you know, maybe my father and my two sons, probably in about 10 years when they can really act a little bit. I think that would be a pretty good way to spend the day.
How old are your boys, and have you gotten them started in golf?
I haven't really. They'll smack a ball around a little bit. My parents have a putting green in their backyard, so they'll hit it around a little bit back there. But they're almost three and almost four. So they're kind of just getting to the age where they might take a little bit of direction. But they don't spend much time doing it. They're out hunting lizards and stuff like that. They haven't taken much of an interest in it on their own. So they kind of watch me a little bit and know that, and it's when I say, hey, I'm going to work, my son will say, are you going to golf? And I'll say, yes. So they kind of, you know, they know what I'm doing, but they haven't taken any explicit interest in it. And I haven't really made much of an effort to either. So they're kind of busy digging holes and hunting lizards.
Yeah, they'll come. It'll be a few years. They'll come to understand that at some point,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that'll be a fun time.
Cameron Young, can't thank you enough. Congratulations on a great 2025 and wishing you all the very best going forward.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you having me.
At William & Harry Golf, comfort meets purpose. Through their care campaign, William & Harry is partnering with charities to give back, donating a portion of every qualifying sale to support your cause. Enhance your next fundraiser with William & Harry customized golf shoes, auction packages, or exclusive giveaways. Crafted from fine deer skin, calf skin, and exotic leathers, William & Harry golf shoes offer all-day comfort from the course to the clubhouse in vibrant, eye-catching colors. Learn more at williamandharry.com or email info@williamandharry.com. William & Harry, style with a mission.
Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are the best performing, most consistent in the game. So how does the best get better? You start by listening to the best players in the world. You experiment, iterate, validate. You trust the best process to create the best golf ball the game has ever known. The all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. More speed off the tee. More control with your irons. More spin with your wedges. And more opportunity to shoot your lowest scores.
Well, we thank Cameron Young very much for his time. His insights, as I said before, he's just a very thoughtful guy. He's the kind of guy you root for. And I know that a lot of his peers were happy. There was a coincidence, certainly, with him being the 1,000th unique winner on the PGA Tour when he won at Greensboro at the Wyndham Championship. And I would like to think there's a lot more positives ahead for Cameron Young, a lot more Ryder Cups ahead for him. And hopefully for the U.S., one of these days, a Ryder Cup victory. Speaking of a guy who knows how to win the Ryder Cup, Rory McIlroy, and what a year. I mean, while Cameron Young had the breakthrough year, Scottie Scheffler won two major championships. The year 2025 is Rory McIlroy's year, winning the Masters, completing the Grand Slam in April, then leading the European team to victory at Bethpage Black in the Ryder Cup, which he had predicted that they would go and do. And then on Sunday in Dubai, winning the what had been called for a long time the Order of Merit, and Colin Montgomery has won it 8 times, and now it's called the Race to Dubai, and Rory won that Race to Dubai or Order of Merit for the 7th time in his career, and it was very emotional for him because that meant that he passed Seve Ballesteros, the late Spaniard. And I've said often about how much the Ryder Cup means to these guys. And I've talked about legacy and the players that have come before them. And certainly Seve is right at the top of the list and how that remains with them. And they feed off of the legacy of those players. Listen to what Rory McIlroy had to say to Sky Sports when he was asked about who he talked to before the final round. He didn't win the event. He lost in a playoff to Matt Fitzpatrick, but he had way more enough points to win the big money. But listen to what he had to say about who he talked with and what Seve Ballesteros means to him and to European golf.
It's amazing. I had a conversation with his wife, Carmen, before I went out to play today. And you know, she told me how proud he would have been. And it's, you know, I said this on this green last year to you. He means so much to this tour and to the European Ryder Cup team. And we rally so much around his spirit and his quotes and, you know, everything he meant for European golf. And to equal him last year was cool, but to surpass him this year, I didn't get this far in my dreams. So it's very cool.
That's very cool indeed. I didn't get so far. This far in my dreams. What a year. What a year. We're one of the greatest players to ever play the game. And I would think his chances are very, very good to tie Monty next year with his 8th Race to Dubai title. Congratulations, Rory McIlroy. Congratulations to Adam Shank on the other end of how you go about winning a golf tournament in his 243rd try on the PGA Tour. Adam Schenck prevailed at the Butterfield Bermuda Championship. A couple of stories came out of that. I don't know if you saw any of the highlights, but 40-mile-an-hour gusts, and they were, I mean, it was almost unplayable at times to see some of the conditions these guys had to deal with. Schenck survived. He moves from, 134th in FedEx Cup points to 67th, and that gets him in the all the full field events next year. It secures his card. It was a massive win. The second story that came out of it was this whole idea that of him of one-handed putting. I mean, a PGA Tour player putting with one hand, and that's exactly what he had done. It kind of traces back to a guy named Mike Hulbert, who won three times on PGA Tour. And Mike is 67 now and kind of is a putting guru. And Schenck had talked some to Mike, and Mike had tried the one-handed putting, and Schenck just wanted to give it a try. And so he did. And something that he said, he said, "I can tell you 10 different ways, theories, techniques I've used in my hotel room this week, just trying to kind of figure it out. I think the answer I come up with is there is no answer. It's just whatever works for you, works for you." He didn't use the right-handed only putting grip on every hole, but he used it enough. Maybe that becomes a little bit of a trend. Who knows? But congratulations to Adam Schenck, one of the great ironic surnames in golf. To have a name like Schenck and to win on the PGA Tour says a lot about his game. Next week, it's Thanksgiving. And earlier today, I conducted the interview with my dear friend Dennis Walters and his friend, his great friend of 60 years, PGA of America professional Wayne Worms. They will be our guest next Tuesday, the 25th, as we lead into Thanksgiving. Dennis, in addition to being a member of the World Golf Hall of Fame, was just honored by the PGA of America and installed into the PGA Hall of Fame. It is the greatest. It's the greatest story in the history of golf. I lead with that when I introduce him. I agree with it. It's something that Wayne had said about a kid who grew up in New Jersey and had all the makings of a PGA Tour player. In 1974, a horrific golf cart accident, loses the lower extremities. And from that, somehow, some way, Dennis Walters goes on. And even today at 75, is continuing to put on trick shot golf shows that are way more than just a guy hitting shots with goofy clubs and so forth and so on. It's all about a message, and it's all about dreams. I'm so pleased you're going to really enjoy that interview with Dennis and with Wayne Worms next Tuesday as we lead into Thanksgiving. Again, congratulations to Adam Schenck. Congratulations to Rory McIlroy. And thank you to Cameron Young and to his father, David. Cameron, go get him in 2026. We're rooting you on. For my good friend, Jed Self, Kelly Elbin, signing off on Musings on Golf.